Hello all, and welcome to Awakening. Welcome those that are tuned in to CosmicDimensions.com, who is also streaming this live for us. And I'm your host, Michelle Mache, and I just really want to say hi to everyone in the chat and those that are coming online. Yeah, Sylvia, you like that music in the chat. It's Sea of Glass. It's one of my kind of faves. If you don't have sound in the chat room, go ahead and refresh. So those that are tuning in right now, I just want to share a little bit about the focus of Awakenings. The focus is to map the times of transition and change that are occurring individually as well as collectively, that we are in this collective awakening that has a lot of different forms to it, but also different waves to it and different levels. And one thing that we can be sure of is nothing ever just organically happens all at once. There's always a building. There's always an unfolding. It may seem to peak or crown like a birth or the sprout coming through the dirt. There may be a peaking or a crowning of some sort. And a lot of people look at that as the awakening. But it's what's happening all along, all through the whole process, meaning those changes that are seeming to happen very imperceptibly or on the subconscious plane or subtly. And one thing to remember, that a lot of these changes happen first energetically. That it all comes from energy that we are. We're that manifested form. So sometimes you just get a sensing, a feeling, or a knowing. So at Awakenings, we track this. We have the Sacred Space of Empowerment Room, also known as the chat room, and wonderful people that are consciously on a path that have a lot of insight and wisdom, as well as links. I see links sometimes all the time going up there. To help people to, you know, resources. Basically, this is really a place to connect in with the resources. And you all that are listening, you as participants in this, are holding the space for yourself as well as others. And even those that are listening later in the archives, whether on Blog Talk Radio or iTunes or the other stations, you are holding that space. And you're sending us what you need and what you want to cover as well. Since there is that connection. Tammy in the chat's calling the contractions in still places, like the birthing process, for sure. Yes. And I think sometimes what I find interesting is because there has been on some level, a focus of spirituality or spiritual integration as cut off from the mind. Now we're embracing more the mind, but and seeing how that figures in, but also the body. And that's what we're meant to do here. This is the temporary world, the sensual world. It's of experiencing of the senses and of the emotions, the energy in motion. So in essence, we're experiencing that Atlantean energy with the Lemurian or the Mu energy, the higher mind, the mind of Aquarius, if you will, of the collective, and that is I call the Einstein mind or Einstein thinking, the intuitive, the place of flashes of insight. And what we're doing is connecting that with the mind of Leo, which is the individual expression, the individual aspect of love and individual experience. But there's a real fusing on an etheric level, on a mental, emotional, spiritual level, on a mind-body level. There's a real fusing, and on a soul level, from the soul to the personality, and living from this higher perspective. Not always easy to do. Not always easy. It's a challenge right now. We're really being redirected in a lot of ways. And Tammy in the chat is saying the way to integrate the spiritual awareness is in the very practical side of grounding. Yes, fusing. Yes. And that's what I feel, which I'm very excited about, which it makes us more now earth-based or an indigenous-based, is we have to do the fusing. And as Sylvia is putting, fusing to become one, we're recognizing our oneness. That's it's the few. What I'm finding too, and it's interesting, is when our guest comes on a little later, I want to actually ask him this, because it seems that those that live perhaps a more quality life, whatever that means, and maybe to him it's the idea of immortal, or being immortal, immortality, breatharian. I'm going to ask him about that as well. But it seems to be those people have a natural, the ones that I've known of, a natural spirituality. And what I mean is a natural connection to their sense of spirit, to what nurtures their spirit. You know, and what I've seen, some of them may or may not be God in the sense that we know it, or God consciousness, but it may just be a sense of being at peace with their own individuated aspect, and celebrating that and living that out. So it'll be interesting to get his take on that, if that is true, and as Tammy is putting in the chat, this fusing, if that's. What I would say is definitely the more you can fuse, and Senla's saying fusing is red hot, the two must melt. Yeah, wow, I love that. Yeah, we're melting. Yeah, because it's the, if you think about it, it's the separation that causes what we call a lot of holistic health, innervation. You know, we either do things that support our nervous system. And that nervous system goes all up along those chakras, you know, in the spinal column. So when those are out of whack, things don't perhaps fire right or move right, or there can be energy blockages. So it's kind of the chicken or the egg. Did the nervous system create the energy blockage, or the energy blockage create the blockage in the nervous system? It could be either one or both. But there's a term called innervation. When you do things that inspire you or allow you to be more flexible, more subtle, more supple with your subtle energy in your physical body, able to move more, and to nurture and reinforce that nurturing of the spinal column, you're seen to bring energy in. When you're seen to block the energy or stop it, it's innervating. So it's the opposite of bringing the energy in. So I'm just seeing that the split that we've been conditioned to have, of splitting these two ways of being, the soul and the personality, not having them aligned and have the personality be a vehicle for the soul, causes a lot of fracturing. And then Simon's saying when the energy flows, you do feel the heat going through. Exactly. Yes, you do. And you can feel, right, that's it. You can feel the vitality. And so I think part of the path is reclaiming our vitality. I think that's the vital energy, the life force energy, and knowing how to channel into that. And Sylvia's putting, no wonder you're hot all the time. I love it. Yeah. Yeah, Tammy thinks lining up now. Yeah, I think, you know, if you think about it, I always look at, like, the idea of a garden hose when it's, kind of kinked up, or, you know, it's pressed in that funny way that sometimes it can get. No matter how much water you turn on in the faucet, no matter how much water you let out, it's either not going to flow all the way up, it gets jammed up, or it just trickles out a little bit. And so I think we're kind of detangling, unwinding out, so that these two aspects can be fused and lived out more consciously and more continually, more consistently. You know, so it's not, sometimes we're living with that awareness, sometimes we're not. It's just going to be a natural way of being, you know, that it's going to be second nature, actually. One thing I do want to say at this point, if people have questions, which is great, just type in caps so I can see, or put the question mark. We used to have question mark icons, and I don't think we do anymore in our little font option toolkit. I think that that's, if we do, someone let me know. Or if you're on the line, because sometimes we'll be in a stream of consciousness and things are really flowing. If you're on the line and you would like to ask a question, I'll try to remember to look too, but if you press the number one on your phone, then that actually gives me an indicator that you have a question or a comment or want to share something. And I definitely love that, the questions, comments, and even just feedback or comments of where people are right now in their path or what is coming up for them. You can also email me ahead of time at michelle@selfandlight.com, M-I-C-H-E-L-E at S-E-L-F-I-N-L-I-G-H-T.com. That's great. You can, because sometimes people email me ahead of time. I don't know if Debbie is in the chat, Light. She's good about that. A lot of times she'll say, how about this guest? Or would you ask this question? I know you're having so-and-so on if you'll ask this question. And totally, you know, into that. Totally, that's, you know, because it's all of our program. It's for all of us. It's not just, you know, the guests or me or, you know, we're, it's the global participation as we are individually. And now, Sandla, what do you mean by that branding? Tell me. And I love too. I've got the conversation with everyone that's in the etheric, in the ethers, in the ethernet, and then also in the chat, and then with the guests. I just think it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. It's so Aquarian. How many, and I do want to know through this, are feeling that the shifts and changes right now of perhaps being stretched to be more group-focused? Anybody going through that? Anybody? I'd love to hear that. There is a real focus right now, and it's going to heighten. And some of you have heard me speak of this before, that we actually are in 2009 on, let's see, Sandla, brand my show, product, service across, okay, well, yeah. Well, you, everybody knows that's listening. I have a book, Meditation for Everyday Living, and CDs. The links are on the page, or just Google, and then you'll know that you're on so easy. Well, we'll have to talk about this, Sandla. We'll have to, Sandla's got some good ideas. Well, someone did ask me to do an Awakenings page on Facebook. So there is an Awakenings radio page, and it's a great way to share your insight. That's really, I want to just say, that is, for me, and what I got from the guidance about starting this program. And Tammy's right on in the chat, collective creativity, absolutely, is a place for people to share their insight, their wisdom, their understanding, and just what they're going through on the path, because it really does help other people. Sometimes we don't think, you know, oh, why should I say this or post this or put my two cents in, but there's always somebody that needs to hear it. There's always somebody that, oh, you went through that, or you're going through that, or I'm feeling that way too, and sometimes, believe it or not, it's helping someone get through hour to hour, minute by minute, you know, sometimes day by day or transition by transition. And so, you know, you got to think of yourself kind of a scout. Some of you are ahead on the hike, and so someone that's, you know, sitting on the bench on the side going, how much further, then you can give them some insight or say, you know, this is what I did, you know, and people are very open and appreciative of that, and it just enriches, our whole experience, you know, and gives us the confirmation. We definitely need those confirmations. So And our call-in number, everybody, for questions or if you would like to just even give feedback, is 347-539-5122. So that's Awakening's call-in number, 347-539-5122. And again, if you do have questions or comments, just press the number 1 on the phone, and you'll be in the caller queue, and I'll know that you have a question or a comment. So one of the things that seems to come up invariably when we're talking earlier about life force or vitality is that idea of how are we living? Are we living a quality life? And how do we live better? And is that living longer? Or is it short? Is it quantitative, qualitative? What is that experience of living a more fulfilled life? And today we have with us author of Wake Up, Live the Life You Love, Wake Up Moments of Inspiration, co-authored with Wayne Dyer as well as some other wonderful beings. And Ben is an experienced security consultant for various financial institutions and basically used his unique skills in finding fraudsters to locate the oldest people alive. And then to his amazement, he began to see that there actually were many people living among us that were 250 years old as well as 1,000 years old. And so he came away with some interesting insight and information on this whole idea of the quality of life or quantity of life. So with that, I want to welcome to Awakenings Ben Abba. Hi, Ben.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
I sure can. Welcome to Awakenings.
Thank you. It's a great honor to be on the show, and I'm looking forward to an exciting interview with you.
Great, great. And your sound is wonderful. I don't know what you're doing, but all our guests need to do what you're doing, whatever you're using, whatever the phone is. Your vitality is coming through clearly, Ben.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I thought of, is it Abba or Abba?
Abba is how I pronounce it, but you can pronounce
Abba,
any way
okay.
you want.
Ben Abba, okay. Because it actually means father, so I thought that was interesting. Kind of father to grandfather. So tell us a little, I'm very curious about this. Tell us a bit about your journey or how this developed. I know you were going out and basically kind of doing a bit of sleuthing and discovered that there really are people that are living to this age. How did this begin for you?
Well, in the early 90s, a coworker dropped a tape off on my desk titled Dead Doctors Don't Lie. And I don't know if you're familiar with that tape or not, but it's by a Dr. Walsh, who is a trained and certified veterinarian that as a hobby was researching the obituaries of our modern-day doctors. And he quickly found out that our doctors and many of our health givers have an average lifespan less than that of a typical non-healthcare giver. And so I began to wonder if we shouldn't be modeling our lives after our health givers. Who should we be modeling our lives after? Who should we be looking for advice on how to live longer and healthier lives? So I decided to look for what's the oldest people alive that are living among us and kind of see what they're doing, whether their secrets are survival and their secrets to living a longer and healthier life. And that's how the journey began.
And let me ask you, go
ahead.
Well, do you find that it's more indigenous people? I know there's a lot of ancients. I'm thinking of the Hunzas. Or are you finding this, because I know you say among us, so that means, you know, in our culture that there are these super Centaurians.
What I found was quite surprising, and I kind of expected there would be some people living quite a long time in the ancient mountains of Tibet and, you know, some of the ancient parts of India, which there are. There are some definitely people living quite a long lives there. But I found a scattering of people all over the different continents, including one person in the United States who's about 160 years old, I believe.
Wow. Now, are they more in rural areas?
Well, again, that was where majority of them are living, and that's kind of where you would expect they would be. But the gentleman who I found to be the oldest of the bunch is living in an urban area along the Mediterranean Sea.
Along the Mediterranean Sea, okay. But still not in the United States.
No. The oldest person in the United States is to my research so far, is 160 years old.
160, but that's still...
much older than we've been told is
yeah,
the length of our oldest person alive.
And how, and do you think that it's a, do you think that beliefs are hindering the longevity?
I think that's a huge part of what these
wow.
people have realized. And again, a lot of people want the 5-second soundbite, especially as Americans, and what's the secret to immortality? And my best answer to that, it's all in the programming. And the programming, a lot of it is beliefs. Beliefs as well as goes along with the programming. We're programmed to die versus programming to live a longer life.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what's interesting on this note, because as a life coach and therapist, over the years working with a lot of women that later on, quote-unquote later on in life, trying to get pregnant, and I'm saying in their 40s and even 50, 51, I've known some that have, and I said, you know, what's interesting, a lot of indigenous cultures don't have that issue because they don't have the belief system that they're only fertile for a period of time. And so there's higher incidence of, mid 40 and on pregnancies, as well as, I've seen women, in their mid to late 40s, and I think the eldest I've known that I worked with was 51. So it does seem to be something with, as well as my mom had my youngest brother, I think she was 42 or 43, and back then, but she didn't think, I can't do, there does seem to be a direct correlation with, to some degree anyway, maybe some is genealogical or biological as well, but it does seem that beliefs, if you're believing, well, I can't do this, or now at this time, things like my health will start declining, or when you get this age, this or that happens. Do you find that the people that are living longer don't have those beliefs?
Exactly. Let me give you a good example of that. In the 1970s, in fact, 1973, National Geographic had an issue dedicated to people in the mountains of Russia that lived an excessively long life. In fact, one gentleman who they were talking about and died a few years after that article was living to 168 years of age. He had recently married at 110. Now, I didn't exactly track to see if his wife had given birth after 110 years old, but it sounds to me like that she was probably capable of doing so. And from other research following that, there's a large community of people over 100 years of age, living quite long, healthy lives in this little area in Russia that, again, I'm not very good at pronouncing Russian names, but it's something that could be easily looked up either on my blog or other parts of the internet, but there's a large community and they all believe that they can live longer, and they do.
So there really is something to that belief. Do they track age as much? Do they celebrating birthdays or that kind of thing, that ritual aspect?
Well, I don't. I think the birthday celebrations that we have commonly around the world today are pretty much a couple hundred year old traditions. So people that are within the last, less than 250 years old probably do celebrate a lot of birthdays, but the people that are much older than that rarely do, or they'll just do it just to accommodate their families or friends.
See, I think, and it's fascinating speaking with you about this, because I really feel it's some of our rituals and our ideas about what happens at certain times and ages and stages that start setting people up. Now this is going to happen, or now I have to do this, or another year, that means I'm getting old. This kind of, I don't even like to speak it because I know it's putting it out there, it's reaffirming it, but I really do think that there is something to the whole structure of society that it, when you're counting everything all the time, there's something limiting about that.
Exactly. And then, and a lot of it, I think, has to do with what many of our industries base their income on, the death of us dying at an earlier age, whether it be from mortuaries, insurance agencies, insurance companies, and even Social Security, in a sense. So we're being programmed by our media, I'm sure, to live a shorter life, whereas these people who basically disconnected from a lot of the media choose to live a longer life and do so.
Mm. So you're saying that they disconnected? Is it they're not watching stuff as much or listening as much? Is that what?
It seems to me that they're all of them are. I mean, I find a very rare occasion where they'll pay attention to the news very much. Although the oldest gentleman that I've made contact with recently got a television set and has been watching the news, but for the most part, he spent most of his life just talking among friends, and whatever conversation at the time would be what his news was, versus reading the paper every day and watching the news at night.
Mm-hmm. And what do they do? What kind of activities do you see them in more involved in?
A lot of them just do there's a lot of activities, and that's quite a bit of a long answer, but let me give you some of the shorter phrases. Walking is a customary thing that they do, fishing, spending time with family and friends. A lot of them are, especially if they're over 250 years of age, have drank wine or had beer, and then sometimes they'll work a little bit on raising their own grapes or their own hops. Mm. Sometimes it's just catching their own food, just going on, whether it be some of them have tended to do hobby farms, and some of them actually have some sort of a business. Usually it's merchant or commodities or merchandise of some sort.
Do they keep active working?
It seems like they do, yes.
Mm-hmm. Or productive,
Yes. Keeping from being bored, I guess is what you could say. I've noticed that the oldest gentleman has spent many times throughout his life doing different tasks, but including teaching. He's teaching at colleges a few times. So their stories are pretty remarkable. And it's not all the same. That's what. But there's a lot of similarities, and one of them is they do keep active, and do not seem to. They seem to find stress-free work. If I could just put it that way, I definitely find that's a commonality. Is there, whatever they do, whether it be a hobby or an occupation, it's as stress-free as possible.
Mm-hmm. And what would you? So not high. It sounds like not high competition.
Correct.
Interesting.
Or just avoid the competition at all. Just say, do you want to do business with me? If you don't, that's fine. There's plenty of others out there to do business with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Almost sounds like they're following their resonance or wherever they're really, instead of pushing for something.
Exactly.
Right. It reminds me years ago, I don't know if this woman, I think she was 92. Years ago, I had a show called Fashion and Beauty. We went to the Bahamas and interviewing, kind of blending this life focus, more of a lifestyle program. And there was a woman there. She drank Campari. She swore by that. But she still climbed coconut trees. I don't even know if I could climb one now. I probably could. I guess I would. And sure enough, she showed us. She still climbed coconut trees to get down the daily coconut to mix with her Campari. And so what you're saying, very active, and I noticed that with her as well, she was very, not pushy, but productive, not trying to cram in getting a bunch of stuff, but she definitely had a full life of, she still had it. She had an herbal shop and, stayed viable, I guess is what I'm hearing you saying as well. So that it's something that she enjoyed doing, but it wasn't this heavy competition. How detrimental do you feel that is for us, Ben, the competition?
I definitely feel that stress is a major factor to shortening our lives. And in fact, as I've been incorporating some of these secrets of immortality into my own life, I've noticed that I'm starting to gravitate towards a more stress-free life and try to reduce the amount of stress in my occupation as well as my in my lifestyle.
And what is your occupation now?
It's still doing some security consulting for various financials. I do help out them with whether it be network security or finding fraudsters and tracking down sometimes fraudsters. Most of it's done virtually. Sometimes it has to be done physically.
And you mean insurance fraudsters?
Financial fraudsters primarily, but insurance is part of it as well.
Okay. And meaning what? Like what are they doing? Like credit,
like for
someone's credit card or something?
Try to prevent somebody from breaking in on the internet, or if, like you said, they're forging checks or forging credit cards and stuff like that. Usually a lot of it now, more and more, is going on electronic fraud, and that's where I kind of get involved with that, preventing them from hacking into banks.
Yeah. Now, I love this because those are two – it is very disparate. It seems desperate. How did they dovetail? I know because of the situation of this person bringing this tape, but they seem to be very opposite somehow.
Well, one of the things that the occupation taught me was how to find people that I need to look for, you know, whether it be virtually or realistically. And I learned some techniques, you know, kind of like what a private detective does to find, and like, for instance, data mining. Data mining is a technique using the internet to find people. Well, as part of my occupation, I have to go find people. And this gave me a new tool to use for researching to find the oldest person alive. Also, I have to look for most hackers don't have a sign outside their house that say, hey, I'm a hacker and I'm going after you or something. You kind of have to look for little telltale signs that they're out there looking or trying to get into your system, and then you use those telltale signs, some information commonalities, to track them down if you need to be, or where to stop them. And these are little telltale signs that I was able to use to help me find this super centenarians, what I call them, or in a sense, immortals that are living among us today.
Mm-hmm. It does amaze me how we always, whatever we've been doing, always fits in with our next step, you know, our next phase, if you will. It all ties together. So how do you focus to go find these people? Do you just say I'm going to pick an area, or do you in research this area, or is it a broader search, I guess?
That would take a long answer, but let me break it down a little bit for you. I first went researching on the internet to see what records we have of long-living people that are among us. And, of course, what the Guinness Book of World Records says is 122 years by Gene Kelmet. But the oldest person I could find on the internet was Lee Ching-Young at 256 years, according to the New York Times, who died at 133 years of age. So I realized that when I was going through the internet research that there's certain areas that were a little more likely that would be some older living people among us. And so it was kind of part of the target. And then I started using something called advanced researching skills to find the areas where I thought they would be, and then kind of start working, kind of focusing on what I thought was the oldest person alive. I thought I'd start with the oldest and work my way back from there. And the person who I thought was the oldest was an area that I could get access to and wasn't too difficult. So I focused on that person, and that's how, using more and more advanced techniques, researching skills, and some data mining techniques, and my basically private detective techniques, I was able to finally locate them and make contact with them.
Mm-hmm. And when you do, are they receptive?
Very much not so, because I think they prefer to remain private. They don't want people. They're kind of like everyone seems to like to lie about their age. Well, they kind of like their idea that they can live privately among us comfortably without having to divulge their actual age. And the oldest gentleman was pretty shocked and surprised that I knocked on his door and said hello. So he wanted basically nothing to do with me at that time, and I had a lot of persistence to get him to open up to me.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say that I think the society has basically, over the years, either you treat these people like they're witches if they live longer, or attack them for knowing something that they shouldn't know, or now we have what's called the paparazzi problem, which is if they ever did come out, they would probably be hounded for the rest of their lives by thousands and thousands of people that they decided that they just want to keep their privacy and not only part of a survival, but just so they can live a longer and healthier life without the stress, I think to reduce the stress in their own life.
Mm-hmm. What do you think that they have to teach us or show us?
Quite a bit, and that's kind of why, again, this was a personal journey of mine, and when I started to get this gentleman to open up and tell me his story and his techniques for living longer, healthier life, I felt it was a crime against humanity not to divulge it to some people, so I made an effort to put it on some blogs and some forums, and then I realized that that's not the good way to present all the material, so I'm starting the process of writing it and putting it in a book, and hopefully lay it out in a logical sense for people to digest it and to incorporate it in their lives. There's so much information that they have. They've seen unwritten history. They've seen their own ways of survival that I think are really important for all of us to listen to and do what we want to from there.
Well, see, and it's interesting that it sounds like they're a little bit isolated too, though. Or are they just living among us? Are they just, and we don't know the actual age, or are they a little bit more just with a smaller group and friends and family, more isolated?
Well, they appear to live, it's both in a sense. They appear to live, I focused on a couple of them, but the majority ones I could find were in a rural area, so they're somewhat isolated, but they all live within at least a small community, and they lived among us as the grandfathers of the community. The oldest gentleman, who again lives in an urban area, doesn't divulge his age, but he looks like a typical senior citizen walking down the street if you saw him and came upon him there. But again, he's isolated as far as his identity is concerned, but he still lives among the community as an elder or as a grandfather type figure.
Mm-hmm. And does he have family?
Yes, he does. He has a son who appeared to be his own biological son, and that son has a granddaughter, so that I'm aware of. So that it's obviously he's still able to procreate at quite a bit of years of age.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, the family would know his true age.
Actually not. Divulged to me was that he keeps it away from, he basically changes identity about every 100, 150 years and assumes a younger identity. So he claims that no one in the last couple, in quite a bit of time has not been able to identify or know his true identity. And he said that a few of his wives suspected it, but still they didn't know the truth about his true age.
Now that
there's probably
is
a lot of... There's probably a lot of issues with the family knowing him being a certain age, and it probably also, he probably considers it a threat. Again, it only takes one child to make a small comment, and your whole life is ruined. So I think they all feel it's to their betterment to not divulge their true age. The gentleman I just mentioned, Lee Ching Young, who according to the New York Times lived to 256, was bragging that he was only 197. So there was a case where everybody knew he was quite old, but he's still bragging about being 60 years younger than what he actually was.
Now, when you're saying one comment that it could be detrimental, what would be the fallout?
Well, I think the big fallout today is if someone ever found out his true identity, they turn him into a lab rat and die. Dissect them alive, and I think that I think that they've got that kind of fear. There's so many, like I said, the paparazzi are just crazy with different people. I'm sure they would be bugging. These people don't live in an isolated mansion, so it would be not difficult for paparazzi to be camped out in his front yard or sidewalk or wherever they're living at the time and just cause them a severe nuisance. The oldest one's first comments to me was, I'm not taking on any students, so he didn't even want to talk about teaching anybody as well. But yet, like I said, I'm very persistent and did my best to make a friendship with this gentleman, and he finally opened up and started telling me some of his stories, and that's where things kind of took off from there. But they really value their privacy quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually didn't think about that. The lab rat and as well as paparazzi, and yeah, I guess their whole life would change. So when you do a book, then in a sense you can be the voice for them, and they can remain anonymous.
And that's kind of what I'm going to start doing here. He gave me permission to give parts of his story and parts I do not have permission to. But I there's some of it that I don't have permission to. I really think the world needs to hear. He has a lot of religious biblical experiences that I think are very important to talk about, and I want to get that out to the public. But I don't have permission to talk about that yet. However, as the stories about his eyewitness accounts of history, I definitely can talk about. And I've got a lot of his secrets of immortality, and I'm going to research it a little bit better and put some comparisons to our modern science, and that's kind of what I'm going to do when I have that the first book done. I'll get the second book about how he actually extended his own life and his love and lifestyle. I think that's to me is the core issue here that's really important to discuss with people.
Is the life extension?
Yes. How did he do it? That's kind of why I approached him, and the bonus was, This gentleman was a member of history that, what divulged this month is that one of his previous names is a household name to even today.
Mm. Now, let me ask you, Ben, did he consciously, and I'm going to say intentionally, want to extend his life? Or, and I guess this goes for the other people you talk about, or is it something that just kind of happens and is kind of unfolding? And they find themselves, I'm living older and older.
That's an excellent question. It's the one I'm kind of struggling with myself. It seems like he just doesn't believe in death, and so therefore death never was an option to him. Although he came close to death several times in his life, he seemed to survive it without, after a severe amount of, a little bit of suffering there, he seemed to survive it just fine. So I believe it has something to do with not only his beliefs, but also the circumstances that became part of his beliefs. In other words, we just had recently had a plane accident. I believe it was off the coast of Africa where they said a 5 or 6 year old survived the plane accident. I don't know if you heard about that. It was on the news a couple of days ago.
I did.
You know, and there's a kind of an example of where they're in a place of danger where they're certain death, and yet they, for some miracle, they certainly somehow survived. And that's kind of what this gentleman went through a few times in his own life. And I believe it has to do with the belief system, and his connection with the Creator and his lifestyle. All that combination together allowed him to survive places when it was certain death, or he should have died, but survived anyway.
Mm-hmm. Now, see, that's interesting, too. Now, I mean, I mentioned at the beginning of the program, did they have a more spiritual connection or spiritual relationship of some sort?
I would say definitely all of them that I've made contact with have a very strong spiritual connection with the Creator, whatever term you want to use for the Creator. Mm-hmm. I prefer God or Father, but other people have other names for them. And I call him a him, but it can be. I'm sure it's not a gender type creator. I mean, it's probably of both genders. But again, I don't want to get into semantics here. They all have these common beliefs, and I believe it's part of their survival. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to spend time with a guru. I got a chance to have a brief meeting with the Pope Paul II, and all of them, if you get to spend some time with them, you'll see that there's something about them. They feel very connected, very enlightened, like they're almost surrounded with this intense amount of love. This gentleman has that those qualities as well, and you can kind of tell that they're protected. You don't know how quite exactly, but you can just feel it. You know, when you're near them,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's a lot to do with their belief system again and their connection with their creator.
Mm-hmm. I found yes, because I have worked with gurus or spiritual teachers, and that, you know, actually tended to be a lot older. May not have gotten 100. Well, I don't know. Maybe they were older and they didn't say. As well as some in Europe, more, I don't know, indigenous, and as well as country folk, you know, that seem to have this innate connection, protection, feeling connected to the all that is or God, very in tune and touch, and so therefore feeling very safe. I think one of the things for our culture in the more mainstream, you know, let's say westernized culture, there seems to be more fear about not making it or not being taken care of. And I think, as you said earlier, you know, stress is you know, counterproductive to longevity and immortality and quality of life. I think that fear of not being connected or taken care of, or something's always going to happen bad, I think really robs people. I want to get your take on that.
Well, there's a lot I could say about that, and I don't want to get too much in my own personal beliefs, but these people definitely seem not to be afraid all the time. They seem to be living life to its fullest. You know, not so much, I would say, totally rose-colored glasses, but to the point where they don't worry about things. And I think the worry and the stress is what is detrimental to our health versus living life to its fullest. And, you know, they survived certain death, and seem to come out of it just fine. So there are different examples of it, and we just talked about the girl that was in the child that was in the plane crash, and I believe that they're all have it, those, you know, those kind of, where they just, the accidents will happen to them, but they're not afraid of it, they're not worried about it, they just go through it and be treat it as just another part of their life.
But now, to me, when you're speaking this, it sounds like that it's something that's already within them. So do you think it is something that can be developed?
I definitely believe that we all have the capability of becoming immortal. I definitely do know, after speaking with these mm-hmm. people. One of the things, and again, this is part of my research, was to find out if this, again, the oldest gentleman, maybe we should go ahead and say it for your audience. I fully believe, and my research shows, that he is almost nearly 2,800 years of age. And that's mm-hmm. the oldest one I found so far. There may be another one close to that age living among us. And the rest are basically between 250 and this 2,800-year-old person.
Mm-hmm.
But he basically, his whole life is around, you know, living it to the fullest, and it doesn't seem to bother him as much. The mm-hmm. possibility of what's going on, you know, other outside of what his own little community is.
Mm-hmm. How did you get these people to open up? I guess it's a real rapport and trust, I guess.
Well, that's a big part of the question. And I kind of wrote a little bit, summarized it a little bit in the book that I have published called Wake Up Moments of Inspiration, which I think you talked about when we opened the show with. I talked about kind of how I got him to open up, and it wasn't an easy task, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I came to him with my research, and I had to pull some strings, both physical and spiritual strings, to get him to open up. But once I presented himself and showed him respect, I think that has a big key to the thing, is they need mm-hmm. to know that you're going to respect their wishes, their privacy. And even though you're going to ask them some questions and get them to tell some secrets they don't want to tell the most people, if you show that you respect their privacy, that seemed to help him, this gentleman I talked to,
mm-hmm.
open up quite a bit.
Now, and you mentioned immortals, so I want to. So, when you're saying immortals, are you saying living forever or living for a certain extended time?
Well, my definition of immortal is someone's 250 years of age or older. That basically death is a choice and not a predetermined event. In other words, they can live as long as they so choose. So that's how I call it immortal. It appears to me that these people that are over 250 years of age again, don't worry about death. They don't, it's not part of their lives, and they just continue to live as long as they choose. And I suppose if the day comes and they don't want to live anymore, they get bored or whatever, they say, I've had enough, that's when they'll check out.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. Some I've had shamanic training, so some Native Americans have that as well. I don't know if the exact age, but they do have that ability to just leave or walk away, you know, just and knowing there's a sense or I'm done or that's interesting. Now, what do you did you do any research as well on breatharians?
Breatharians, I've heard of them and did a little bit on them, but I didn't find anything that correlated to the immortals that I talked to. Did correlate quite a bit is I call them CRDs or the calorie restricted diet people. Have you heard about those as well?
Oh, I've heard of it, but go ahead for our listeners.
Barbara Walters did a special not too long ago called How to Live to 150 Years. And on her show, she had a couple interesting things that seemed to be correlate with my research. One of them, of course, was the ingredient from red wine. And again, most of these immortals do drink at least one glass of red wine a day. I think it's called resveratrol, I believe it is.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that she had on her show was a group of people that believe that they're restricting their diet with calories, that they basically they call their calorie-restricted dieters. They believe that restricting their diet allows them to live longer. And I noticed among the people that I was researching that they all have a very limited diet. They just eat just enough to survive, but they don't gorge themselves at all. And I think that was a big key to their key to survival. It's a, you know, some of us that like to eat and eat good food, it's kind of a difficult challenge. But if you start thinking about eating what we put in our mouths is, has a lot to do with our health and well-being, then you start thinking about, well, that maybe that's a very big part of extending their own lives. And so I started noticing that that was a one commonality that was very strong among all of them is they eat just enough, seems like, and they're very efficient to digest whatever it is that they do eat.
Mm-hmm. Are they eating more simple foods?
Yes.
Again,
this is one of the surprising things that I learned in my research. And again, we're always taught here that vegetarian is the way to go, but all of these people that I researched that lived over 250 years or more all seemed to have at least about 10% of their diet had some kind of protein. The protein that I did notice that they eat was either fish, lamb, and some of them would eat pheasant. No chicken, no beef, no pork.
Mm-hmm. There does seem to be something in the fish.
Yes.
That I've been seeing, you know, people with fish or vegetable, but having some protein, I guess, which is more, you know, the ancient, in the ancient food chain.
And they all seem to have a lot of fresh salads, and they do eat some grains, but very, again, a small part of their diet was grains. Most of it was, again, either the protein or, in particular, was just the vegetable salads to go along with their meals.
Mm-hmm. And why, so are they, do you feel that, does it seem to be that they're enjoying the food? Are they, in celebration? Or is the food looked at more utilitarian or more functional, like I'm just eating to replenish the body? Or is there that, the celebratory aspect to it?
Well, that's a very good question. I using my 2,800-year-old immortal friend as an example, he seemed to look forward to his one glass of red wine a day, and he looked forward to getting his fish dinner and he seemed to enjoy preparing his fish differently every day or his lamb differently every day. That was kind of something he looked forward to. So it wasn't like it was utilitarian, but it was more like, I know I'm going to have to eat sometime, and I usually eat about the same time every day, but I usually vary it a little bit from time to time. So I think there, and I bring up something, a good point here that I need to kind of stress for your audience is, the 2,800-year-old gentleman made it a point that he always ate at least one meal a day with another human being. So I believe this was it came very clear that all these people realize the importance of human interaction and perhaps sharing the human energy with each other as well as eating the food.
Mm-hmm.
So he would sometimes schedule one of his meals a day, either a breakfast, lunch, or dinner, with like in a coffee shop or a restaurant, and eat the food along with them. You know, maybe kind of a salad or something that he felt comfortable with. But he always made it a point to eat with somebody, either a family member or friend, or simply with mm-hmm. A group of acquaintances, at least once a day.
Okay. And also, I like the idea with the coffee shop getting out. You know, I think people that get out more do something, you know, that kind of little adventure in life, you know, even just getting out and just seeing who's there that you can talk to or seeing something new has got to add vitality. Now, Ben, we have a question in the chat room. I hope I'm going to get this right. If not, something you can call in or somebody type in if I'm not saying this correctly. If you know of the Bathory gland and what your thoughts are?
You know, one of the things that I really enjoy doing these shows is I always seem to learn something new, and this is one thing that I've not heard about before. So, again, I'm going to have to do a little research on this. And
okay,
I'm gonna have
apparently, Barathuri gland, controlled by the four higher senses that you once had, telepathy, clairvoyance. Now, I do know, now that brings something interesting, and I want to get your take on this, Ben, that I've been getting from my guides that we're going to be, the pineal gland is going to be more active and less of the thyroid or hypothalamus, and that apparently the pineal gland corresponds to intuitive thinking coming more from that realm. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Quite a bit. I think, I don't know if you mentioned this or not, one of my advanced skills I've learned along the way is a technique called remote viewing. And
mm-hmm.
before I learned how to remote view, I always considered myself about as psychic as a wet paper bag. And
mm-hmm.
I noticed that after I took the training and began to start using remote viewing in my life, that my intuition greatly increased. And I would still wouldn't call myself a psychic, but I definitely feel there's an incredible amount of, I would say, intuitive, just anticipation, sometimes able to, how would you say, just kind of know things that just out of the blue where you wouldn't normally would before I took the course. So I'm attributing to that my pineal gland, pituitary gland, excuse me, that's the one we talked about, pituitary gland, definitely increased after this class. And how or why that happened, I'm not certain. Maybe it's just I did something to activate it, and it just increased in my life. So I believe that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's very true. And I believe the mm-hmm. people I've researched, they're always seem to be quite intuitive, all of them. And I always thought that's part of their belief system and part of their connection with the Creator.
Mm-hmm. That increase of that gland or activation of it. Let's see. And it seems to be, there'd have to be some, as we are tapping into more God consciousness and living that there would have to be some physical and physiological components. Right? Would you say
definitely
that?
Agree. Definitely agree.
Yeah. Someone just sent in the chat the link for this. Now I'm curious. Is Bathory gland or Bathory gland, an energetic thing, so you don't know enough about it to talk about it. But that there's a link.
Yeah, I see the link there.
Do you see it? In the lower
yes.
part of the Bathory gland is a gland to the tonsils. The same, the pituitary. See, and I'm beginning to feel that there is, within myself and within people that I've been meeting and as well as working with, that there definitely are starting to be, we're starting to have not just physical, but physiological changes within the body in this up-leveling or updating of our software, if you will, inner and outer software. So there does seem to be some changes or on a glandular level.
Oh, definitely. I can give you lots of stories of all these things in my life. It seemed like coincidence or miracles all took one step further to closer to finding this, again, this immortal in my life. And I like to say that, you know, the theory that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear mm-hmm. is definitely true, but it's been true in all of my life. Again, I mentioned I took a remote viewing class. I've taken mm-hmm. other things along the way of similar, opening of my life. And then to find this extraordinary gentleman was just another incredible experience that has taken me on my journey to open up, whether it's on a spiritual level or on the, you know, again, with the glands to open my connection with our Creator.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's up to us to, if you're feeling that resonance, to seek this out or just be open to it. And if it's your next piece, like you said, someone will be there. The teacher will be there. And I just think too, as well as, I mean, obviously we're and I say mainstream level because many of us have already been living this way, but to get that collective more intuitive, more telepathic, that ability to cross that space-time continuum belief, if you will, barrier, so that people are able to remote view. Now, what do you think of this, Ben? It's more of a reclaiming this, don't you think, a realigning to this?
It certainly could be. I'm not, I say the jury's out for me on that one. I just felt that I was definitely drawn in that direction, and there's got to be a spiritual reason why. I also analyzed my life and what my possible previous lives are like, and I noticed that each particular life in my previous lives was one elimination of fear throughout my life. I think that was kind of one of the things that a big lesson that I think I picked up along my spiritual journey. And I noticed in my physical journey here on this particular life, it's been the same way as well, that certain events have eliminated fear. May I give you an example of this, if I could?
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah.
On the mid-80s, on a bet, I was encouraged to go to a seminar. And the seminar was hosted by not a very well-known person by the time, but apparently a very dynamic speaker by the name of Tony Robbins. And at the end of his, he gave a very good motivational speech, and I thought he was an excellent speaker at the time. But at the end of this session that he had was known as the firewalk. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not, but most of his sessions end with a firewalk. And as a scientist, I had total disbelief and had nothing that could, explain how it's possible to walk barefoot across hot coals. I remembered many times as a young child when my dad would barbecue, a little speck of coal would fall on the grass, and I'd burn my feet a couple times very severely on just the tiniest little speck of coal. And yet here I'm looking at 200 people walking over, 12, 14 feet worth of hot coals. It seemed amazing to me. And as I was up there on top of the roof, we were doing this firewalk, I was checking out the coals and seeing, well, there's got to be something in this coal. There's got to be something coating them or whatever. And then this elderly lady, looks just like my grandmother, said, "Get out of the way, Sonny. I want to do it again." And she took her little 8-year-old granddaughter and by the hand. They both walked together over these coals. Well, Mr. Macho here isn't going to walk away without trying. I don't care if they bare my feet or not. I got to do this. And so I end up walking, 4 or 5 steps on his burning hot coals. Well, I tell you, when you walk away from that seminar, fear is the last thing on your mind. And that's one of the things it got me to open up my eyes that my traditional science and my traditional religion just quite isn't explaining all that's going on around me. And that's kind of what kind of took me out of my, paradigm and opened me up to a lot of new experiences and reduced the amount of fear in my life.
Mm-hmm. That seems to be, and I'm seeing that now even for myself, there's different levels we kind of reach of awareness, and it seems to be the fear that not living from the fear and the stress seems to be a huge next piece, I think, for everyone. Because there seems to be more fear and stress being propagated by the mainstream, collective. And especially mainstream media. How do you keep that in check, Ben? How do you keep the fear creeping in?
Well, that again is a difficult question to answer. I'm going to do the best I can. I you know, it's difficult for me not to watch the news because it's part of my business, it's part of my lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But I'm starting to spend more and more time trying to check out from the news. You know, I learn enough to just to know what I want to know, and then I get started stay away from it. Another thing is these experiences in the past. Again, we talked about the firewalk, the remote viewing, and now meeting this extraordinary gentleman. I see that there is an alternative to fear. I see it in their lives. You know, this 2,800-year-old gentleman had a couple episodes in his life where he had extreme fear, but it was only for a short period of time. And he, because he survived, his amount of fear just dwindled significantly, I can see, throughout his life. And again, surviving, you know, 4 steps on burning hot coals drastically reduced the fear in my life. If I can survive that, I can survive just about anything. So I think that's kind of where you've got to, you know, become an observer, not in the moment. An observer in the moment, but not a participant in the moment of this fear, fear-driven society. Another thing that I noticed, too, is we have a lot of entertainment that's fear-based as well, whether it be, you know, the cops and robbers or these horror films. And I'm starting to be drawn away from those and going towards, you know, the more substantial, more that can encourage love, unity, and community and compatibility and survival, those type of shows. That, and so I've kind of like made it a point not to watch any slasher movies and instead look for ones that that have a actual meaningful point in them, whether it be a point of love or a point of helping one another. Let's say Pay It Forward is maybe a good example of that. That was a movie that really I was drawn to, and now incorporated into my life, the Pay It Forward mythology of helping each other out.
There does seem to be something with that, what you were saying with the like the slasher movies are going with. Eventually, it must be robbing the vitality by encoding more and more that fear. I mean, you're even feeling it on a physiological level. So maybe you're right. Maybe even just a decision not to go in that direction. You know, I'm not saying people don't watch singing, but you know, I think there can be too much. There can be too much of that.
Oh, exactly. I call it the salt and pepper philosophy, where if you want to spend time in the dark side, that's fine. But I think the dark side is only there to show you the benefits and the beauty of the light, or the white side of things, the light side of things. And I just have chosen not to participate in the dark side anymore. I just said that's not part of my life. I don't see any value in my life, and I want to stay away from it. So I've made it a conscious choice. And I believe we all have that choice. We all can say enough is enough, and I want to move on into the light and spend my life in the light. And I noticed too that when I go, and there's several strategy that teaches technique, but you surround yourself with love. I don't know how a better way to explain it than that, where it's like a shield. And when you go into business meetings or meeting friends or even adversaries, the shield of love, it seems to very much help me move through that process, reduce the stress, reduce the tension in the relationships. And I notice a big impact when I do that, whenever I go into these meetings or especially adversarial circumstances, where I just go in there and say, you know, I'll really take my hits, but I'm not going to be here to be the dark one in this conflict. So I notice that quite a bit with these people, as well as with myself in my own life.
Mm-hmm. Part of what I'm hearing you say, really, is the consciousness, being more conscious, more aware, the choice, where are you going to put your energy, your attention, again, the choice to what you want to believe. Now, we had a question from Tammy in the chat for you, Ben. What lifestyle changes have you personally made out of what you learned about longevity?
Well, that's an excellent, excellent question. This is one I really wanted to talk about. Again, I just mentioned one of them is I made it a point to basically shield myself with love, or fill myself with love whenever I go into any situation with another human being, or whether it be business or personal. One of the things that I've also learned, are you familiar with a musician by the name of John Denver? I don't know if that name's ringing
yeah.
a bell to you or not, but he's mm-hmm. was quite popular. He always
Roger
made it a
high.
Okay, yep, you got it. Well, he always made it a point to tell people, this is, I was told anyway, that he was going to die in his plane, he's going to die in his plane, he's going to die in his plane. Well, guess what? He died in his plane. And so I one of the things I realized is your language is a very big part of your survival, of your life. And so now I've made it a point to be conscious of what I'm saying, to the point where I'm saying words of love, words of light versus words of darkness, words of hate. You know, I don't say I hate you, I despise you. You know, we have a society from, we used to say whenever you had a problem, you know, bless it versus damn it, you know. And so
mm-hmm.
I think that language has a huge part of it. And what I've incorporated into my life, from interviewing this elderly gentleman, is not to use the words of death, the words of darkness in my life, but use the words of light and living.
Mm-hmm.
I start each day saying, I am an immortal. And I say it as loud as I can in my closed room so people don't think I'm too nuts, but I know the universe is hearing me. And I fully believe that just saying that resonance of that throughout the universe is bringing whatever I need that day to extend my life that day and possibly the next day and possibly longer. So as I started saying that every day, I noticed my lifestyle started changing a little bit at a time. I started eating healthier foods, being more conscious of, again, the amount of stress in my life and how to reduce it. I'm starting to make healthier choices wherever I go. And I feel, again, that this is not we don't have enough time to go through the entire answer here, but I think you can kind of perceive that my programming has changed because of this
mm-hmm.
experience. And that's a lot has to do with extending my own life. I firmly believe that. And I believe I've seen proof of it. And that's kind of where I've taken this to the next step. And so I believe that I've personally, I'm on the road to being an immortal simply because I've taken those steps. And again, I am not going to go jump out of a plane without a parachute to test it out, but I believe I don't have to. I believe it. I've seen it in my own life that these little things are coming together where everything in life is like, I don't care how hot the coals are, I can walk barefoot on them and know I'll survive.
You've had the confirmations.
Yes.
You know, Tammy's putting in the chat, you're reframing. Yeah, she's in great shift, Ben.
Yes.
But I think that's the consciousness, and maybe in a sense that's part of, you know, your sharing and your gift on this level, this dimension, is another way of having people check what are you believing? What are you thinking? What are you believing? What are you focusing on? Because a lot of what you've been sharing with us has a lot to do with that. You know, where are people putting their attention? What are they believing? That's an excellent example about the John Denver, you know, that it's willing, in a sense, something to happen. The other thing, too, and that's a good question, Senla, in the chat room, do you find with these people, is the body renewing?
Yes,
some
and
people,
that's a...
Is it immortals that they're feeling that the body can remove?
Well, that's an excellent, excellent question, and it's one that, again, we simply don't have enough time to get a full answer to you, but let me give you kind of a couple examples. I am told by the 2,800-year-old gentleman that he has found a way to gradually regress his physical age at times in his life. Let's put it this way. He's been married. He's lost track of how many wives he's had. And so I'm always curious, how does a 2,800-year-old man pick up chicks? So obviously he's done something to improve his looks a little bit to attract, you know, young childbearing women in his life. There is a book that I just recently read. I don't know the author, so I'm going to tell you what I learned from the book. It's fantastic, and it answers this question very well. The book is called The Gabriel Method. It's by an author called himself John Gabriel. And if you get a chance to look at his website, you'll see his before and after pictures. And if you look at those pictures carefully, his before picture looks like he's 20, 30 years older than his after picture, his now new appearance. So I believe he has successfully found a way using his belief system. Again, let me strongly point this out, his belief system and his programming to regress his own physical age. It's there on his website. I believe a lot of these immortals, I call them, have done the exact same thing in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
each one's a little different technique, but the technique is, again, programming. It all comes down to programming. And I believe through their programming, they've been able to regress themselves as needed throughout history. I think the 2,800-year-old gentleman intentionally regressed his age to a point where it's maybe like 10 years younger than when he appears, gets married, and then lets himself gradually age so he doesn't appear to be getting too younger in the middle of a relationship, and then wait till the relationship's over with because, you know, the death or whatever, and then regress himself again.
Wow. Is it a mental regressing, energetic, visual?
I think it's a combination. Again, it's if you look at, the book, and study what John Gabriel taught, he basically reprogrammed himself to lose weight. That's what his purpose of his book is about. And through the loss of his weight, he was regressing his physical appearance. He basically focused, again, I'm going to try not to steal his thunder, but he's basically focused on what he wanted to look like. And he picked a younger version of himself, and he picked a healthier version of himself. And as he focused on it, he basically achieved that over time. And I believe that this was a similar technique that a lot of these immortals use as well.
Mm-hmm. There's something into tuning in, energetically. It's interesting you're saying that, because I had a situation with something I was going through with the thyroid, lymphthyroid, and the vitality issue. And I wanted to go back to a certain time frame and what I was doing energetically, what I was focused on in my energy level. And actually recently was able to do that. I did it with a couple of people that were around at that same time period. They happened to be visiting me. And it was interesting. I fell, but the shock of it kind of shocked everything in. And while I was in motion, I saw myself back at that time, or let's say in that time frame. And somehow it worked. And you know how you get that deja vu feeling and you feel just something like a flash?
Yes.
Ben, have you ever had that happen? Yeah. That came over me. And there was like a triangle of light from me to the other person that was in front of me, and then the person to the side. It created this triangle of light. And something shifted where I was able to kind of tap back into that time frame of that energy and what it represented and bring it here. So be interesting to see, and maybe your book will have some of the how to, you know, I guess it's individual for everyone, but there must be a way to kind of isolate that or codify that, which is maybe what this Gabriel method is about. That's what, if I'm hearing you correctly.
It sounds like there's definitely some similarities there, that's for sure.
Similarities. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing, and I wrote down, somebody said to go back to this in the chat, and I just briefly, but the tape that started it all, and we actually had Tammy in the chat saying she listened to the tape on the immortals. Could you just give the gist of that so that people know a little bit about this tape?
Well, I found the tape
very
incredibly. Yes, it's all over the internet. I think it's very popular. It's a doctor, I think it's Joel Walsh. In fact, I try to sign up for an affiliate program. There's a whole bunch of programs, people out there. The tape they usually offer for free, and it's basically one of his lectures where he talks about using common everyday minerals and spices to heal animals. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but most dogs and cats don't go through chemotherapy to treat cancer, or, you know, diabetes or these other diseases. And what doctors would often, farmers and pet owners used to do was say, well, you know, if I got to spend $100,000 to treat this chemotherapy, I'm going to rather put them to sleep. And so what these veterinarians came up with is certain supplements to basically cure these diseases and extend their lives. So it was part of it was not only treating diseases, but with common everyday minerals and supplements, but it was also herbal, you know, basic herbs. And what's happened is while the veterinarian community is stuck to this basic inexpensive way of treating their patients, which are basically pets and agricultural animals, our modern day medicine has taken off a very expensive approach using, you know, drugs and pharmaceuticals and chemotherapy to basically treat the same thing with less results. So that's kind of where he was coming from. But part of it, he uses his background and his evidence to prove his point was, let's look at the people who are prescribing drugs and chemotherapy versus the veterinarians who are prescribing minerals and supplements to extend our own lives. So I just incorporated a lot of that in my own life because it just seemed to be true. And a lot of the, my research shows there's a lot of evidence. Like, for instance, two of the best antibiotics in the world are oregano and garlic. And interesting enough, there's many stories about people that survived the plagues throughout Europe and through our ages using just garlic and oregano before we even had antibiotics. And one of the things that this 2,800-year-old gentleman was telling me is before they had toothpaste, he used a form of oregano basically to protect his teeth, to brush his teeth with. Now, he still has his original teeth thanks to the oregano. The bad news is the oregano basically blackened to his teeth, so it looks pretty bad. So if he ever cracks a smile, you'll see 3,000-year-old teeth basically, you know, in a 60-year-old man. But if he doesn't do that, he looks pretty, you know, he looks pretty good for his age, obviously. However, the oregano, again, was a natural supplement that extended his life, and it's probably a whole lot better for him than using the toothpaste he's using today.
Yeah, now, and I did some, you put it in the chat, dead doctors don't lie. So those people, I did listen, but I may listen to it again. I did listen to it years ago. Those of you that are just tuning in, we are speaking with Ben Abba, and you can give us your website. I put it in the
yes, it's
the chat.
It's Ben Abba.
What's the best one?
BenAbba.com, B-E-N-N, excuse me, B-E-N-A-B-B-A.com is the my main blog, and it's and it connects. I have kind of my Grand Central Station there. I have a website where my book that's coming out soon, it's in the editing phase right now, called Secrets of an Immortal, an Eyewitness Account of 2,800 Years of History. And the website for that book is secretsofanimmortal.com, and each one of those words put together. And I'm taking pre-orders for that book, by the way. But it's also it's going to be on Amazon.com once we get out and fully published the book.
Good. Now, it's interesting, and just we'll have a couple of minutes remaining, but I wanted to, since you brought it up about the herbs and oregano and stuff, which I totally, I mean, you use that, rarely go to the doctor, use you know, herbs and supplements and foods. But I've been getting from my gut, and I had no idea what this was, and now I'm finding that a lot of people are tuned into this or turned on to this. The ionized water. Do you have any thoughts of that? More ionized alkaline water?
Yes. One of my friends is selling the ionized. I got the Kagan machine, and I got talked into buying one. I use it quite a bit and got hooked on it.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely has a positive impact on my life. But however, I have to mention that I don't believe any of my immortal friends are using ionized water, although they let them do drink mineralized water. So I definitely have a big positive feeling about it. I'm using it now and very much enjoying it. In fact, I'm kind of addicted to it a little bit. I kind of miss it when I don't have it around.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's interesting you said minerals, because that was the other thing that they were saying, even if it's from rocks, that we're needing more minerals and to drink more mineral water. One quick question, because we're almost done. We have energetic. Do you know the age lengths of body and organ lifespans? Or how often does the body regrow itself?
Well, that's a good question, because you know what? None of us has an expiration date at the bottom of our feet. And so that's why they've been able to successfully grow some of our human cells in petri dishes, indefinitely. But not many people have been around to test these cells out and see how long they actually live. So I believe there's two things going on with these immortals, and that is some of their cells are continuing to exist and survive the many years, and some are just basically regenerating themselves over time. So I know that our skin cells, for instance, regenerate themselves quite frequently versus some of our, maybe their brain cells that are constant over time. Certainly his teeth look like they're 3,000 years old, so a lot of those cells in that teeth have been around for quite a while.
Okay. But it sounds like we're really entering a new paradigm, because as this information gets more out there, this begins, it dilutes the other strong, the stronghold of the beliefs of the old paradigm. So it sounds like we really can begin to make a real shift into the longevity, you know, quality of life, and move into that immortal state, just by what you're saying, Ben.
Exactly, exactly. I think it's, and again, I strongly believe it's the programming, and once we've changed our programming, you're going to see more and more people live longer. Of course, it's going to be detrimental to our mainstream media society-driven society, but I think those of us who choose to be centenarians and super centenarians instead of roadkill will live on as long as we want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I just have to get a different game. There's so many games. There's so... They just have to be more creative. They'll just have to figure something else out.
Yeah, I'm sure of that.
Yeah, right, right. Oh, gosh. Well, thank you, Ben. This is wonderful. I'm so glad that you were able to come on Awakenings and share this. And again, those of you that are tuning in, listening by phone, if you have a question, 3 minutes remaining, press number one on the phone, and I will, because we have a couple people that have been listening, but nobody's put up that they had a question. So I'm just make sure. Did you have a question or comment for Ben? This is 478-621.
No.
Okay, great. Okay, just want to make sure, because sometimes people don't know not to. I've had people email later and say, you know, I wanted to ask a question. I'm like, well, you didn't put this little hand up. And then you have your book out also, Ben, with Dr. Wayne Dyer, Wake Up, Live the Life You Love, Wake Up Moments of Inspiration. And there's actually a link on the Awakenings page that will take you, I believe, to Amazon. And then you're going to have The Secrets of the Immortals, an eyewitness account of 2,800 years of history. And that's on the benaba.com website. So those that are listening, that's the information of how to reach Ben. You can also go to the Awakening segment page, and there are links there as well, so that you can find out more information about his research and information. Again, thank you so much, Ben, for being on Awakenings.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a great honor and a lot of fun to be on your show, and look forward to the opportunity again to have a nice conversation with you about some of these other incredible things we've been researching and finding out about these incredible people, extraordinary people.
Yeah, love it. Yeah, definitely open invite, so definitely come back. It's great because we have a lot of regular listeners, so once, you know, we talk a bit, then can dive in further.
Great. Sounds wonderful. And again, there's so much information that we just kind of just touched on today that I would love to explore with you in a later show.
Oh, we had a quick question. Yes, 206-313, you're on Awakenings. We have 1 minute. Did you have a quick question or comment?
Just a comment. Hi, Michelle. It's Teresa.
Hi.
I just wanted to say thank you, Ben and Michelle. What a fascinating show. And it leaves us hanging and wanting more. So hopefully you will have him back on.
Yeah.
And then some of the questions that you touched upon, Ben, that maybe you can go into. I just have a real quick one. Maybe you won't have time to answer, but it'll leave everybody on
the air. We'll be streaming. You can answer. It'll go in the archive. They won't hear in the chat, but go ahead.
The practical human side of the brain question, what makes, you know, how are we to believe that somebody can actually live to be 2,800 years old?
Well, that's a great question. By the way, thank you for your wonderful comments and listening on today. I'll tell you what, that's a really long answer for that question. I will just say Lee Ching Young was one piece of the pie. The walking on hot coals, another piece of the pie, and remote viewing was another piece of the pie. So if I could give it a more opportunity to give you more information, when you put it all together and you got a chance to walk in my shoes, you would say, of course, they have to be able to live as long as you want to live. And so that's the quickest answer I can give you. Maybe if we ever do another show, let's start with that question, and we'll see where it goes.
That's That would be wonderful. Because I'm sure you came across it as you were doing your stuff too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, wonderful.
Definitely. It's a good point, Teresa. Good point. We'll definitely have Ben back on, and we'll dive deeper. But I agree. It's
and I love, absolutely love, yeah, I love the fact, too, that another science mind is coming around to this, because it's just more validation of just how much we don't know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly. And
have
it keeps going back to the beliefs and the programming, the beliefs and the program. You change the beliefs, you change the programming, you change the expectation, you know.
Yeah. What you think about changes, you know, your thoughts become things.
Yeah, so true. Great. Great, Teresa. Thanks for sharing that. That was great.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Well, Ben, so we'll have to reschedule you.
Okay, that's no problem. Anytime, I'm more than happy to come on your show. Really enjoy it. That was a lot of fun. And again, we know we have the startup question for the next show, so I would love to explore that some more with you, and you'll find that the answer is pretty amazing.
Yeah, okay. So to be continued, everyone. To be continued, part two. So until next time, everyone, keep shining your light, sharing your insight, and keep awake.
Thanks again. Thanks again for a great interview. Bye.
Bye. Thank you, man.